Today, we have a very special episode for you. It is the return of Steve Piper, founder of Author Marketing Mastery through Optimization. You probably know the program as simply AMMO, and there's no episode that goes by where I don't advertise for it, speak about it, and generally gush because this program has changed my life. It's given me an opportunity to earn a decent income as a novelist, and it can help you too. I'm going to run this episode 100% ad-free today so you can just hear from Steve and not have any interruptions. That's how much I value his voice in this area. So please buckle in, listen up. There's some amazing changes coming with the most recent update for AMMO, and Steve's going to get very granular. It's also, frankly, one of my favorite mindset episodes ever. I try to get Steve to really crank up the marketing toward the end of the episode and explain why AMMO is such a perfect program, and it is a perfect program, and he refuses to do it. He keeps going back to something we all need to know, and that's the truth. This is hard work. If you want to make a full-time living as a writer, an author of fiction or nonfiction, you're going to have to put in the work. So, without further ado, you don't need to hear from me today. You need to hear from Steve. And I really appreciate you being a listener of TRBM. Here's my interview with Steve Piper.
This is TRBM AMMO Edition. If you're a published author and want to make a living writing books and selling them to avid readers, you've come to the right place. There's simply no program that's more successful at driving readers towards the books you've written. So the only thing you have to worry about is writing a great book. And the system within AMMO takes care of the rest. Thanks for listening to this conversation.
Let's just jump into the deep end. You've been on the podcast before, so people, if you haven't listened, go back to that episode. I'll link it in the show notes. And I want to ask you, you're doing a huge revamp of the AMMO program. And so that's really what I want to spend all of this time talking about.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be back.
Yes.
It feels like 15 minutes ago, but I know it's been months. But thank you for having me back. Yeah, we've noticed certainly over the past few years, but really a lot in the last year, that some of the fundamentals have changed a little bit regarding how do you find customers and how much does it cost to find customers? And it, near as I can tell, it relates to where the advertising platforms happen to be right now in their product development cycle, just in their business cycle. So you sort of have two ends of the spectrum. You have the up and comers like TikTok and Pinterest and Snapchat and, you know, a couple other players, but they haven't quite yet cracked the code on how to help advertisers drive sales. And certainly in our market, that's the case. We don't see much happening in the way of book sales. You can generate a lot of leads on those platforms, but by giving away a free book, those folks don't subsequently come back and purchase, at least in our testing. And I spent a lot of time last summer-ish, I think it was summer, testing a bunch of those platforms, spent a bunch of time and money, and threw the kitchen sink at them all. I just couldn't quite make them back out. So that's the one end of the spectrum. Young advertising platforms haven't really found the recipe yet for helping advertisers make money on their advertising dollar. On the other end of the spectrum is the 800-pound gorilla, which is Facebook and Instagram, which together, they are, at least in the e-commerce world, they're almost three times the size of Google in terms of how much money advertisers spend. And the only reason e-commerce stores spend money on an advertising platform is because those advertisements produce sales. So you know that's where the money is. And we're in an e-commerce business. We don't think of ourselves that way, but that's really the neck of the woods that we're in. And so when you look at Facebook and Instagram's trajectory over the past, you know, 3-4 years, they've added 50% more users. So from 2 billion to 3 billion users, that's a big deal. But it's not nearly as big a deal as the fact that they've almost quadrupled their gross revenue on the year. So from 40 billion a year up to 150. So that's almost four times as much money So if you only increased your user base by 50%, but you've quadrupled your money, it means you're getting more money per, you know, per user and per advertiser. And that's exactly what's happened. And so there's a, when you're building a social media platform or you're building a YouTube channel or a network of any kind, the fastest way to grow is by not showing ads to people. Just have a great experience, no advertisements. You'll really grow quickly. At some point, you have to, you can't rely on investor money to keep the lights on at the company. You have to make money. And so you reach a particular turning point when you say, if you're Zuckerberg, you say, we're big enough. Now we have to start making more money per user. And the way that you do that is you just show more ads in the user's news feed. And that's exactly what's happened. And you sort of see the 3-to-1 ratio, like three organic content posts followed by one ad. Well, that's sort of like the 47-minute to 13-minute split on your television show, right? So 1 hour TV show is actually, it's basically 1/4 advertisement. So Facebook and Instagram, they are mature marketplaces, and that's where they're at in their business cycle. They're paying back the investors who, you know, who invested all the money in their companies over the years. What that means for us is that we've seen our, over the past, you know, few years, we've seen the cost to acquire a new customer also basically quadruple. You know, you could pull in customers at $5 in advertising costs and they would purchase a $10 box set from you, and you could do that all day. What we're seeing now is between $12 and $20 in ad spend required to pull in a new customer. So that changes things in a world where about the most expensive ebook product is 10 bucks, at least in the indie world. Or, you know, it's a paperback and maybe it's $15 to $20, but maybe you're only taking home, you know, $8 or $9 out of that. So right away you can see, hey, these economics don't really work out if the customer is only buying one book from you or one product from you for, you know, for certainly under $20. You have good days where if you can bring a customer in for $12 and you make $20 on the transaction, hey, you're winning. But those are not every day is a good day. There are days when it's at the upper end of that spectrum and it's, you know, $20 per new customer, or maybe even more. So the big adjustments to Ammo have all been related to how do we put more high quality books in front of our customers' eyes so that they have the opportunity to buy from us in a way inside of a time frame where we can pay back the cost that it cost us to go find that customer. So it's a really simple, like, oh, so the cost changed a little bit, so we have to sell more stuff. But that had a really big influence in all of the processes that, you know, that we're settling on for the latest update in Ammo. A second thing that happened is that, you know, for years, you had a hard time selling a book if you didn't first give a book away. So we'd say, hey, get this copy free, first in series, enjoy it, it'll be great. And then right away you could say, hey, you got that free thing, it's in your inbox. Do you want to take a look at a one-time special offer on the series or on a trilogy or on a, you know, a handful of books? And that used to be the only way you could get a customer to purchase from you. It was by first giving them something for free. And it was you were 100 times more likely. I kept trying to make this not be the case. I kept trying to just keep testing and testing just to get them to buy right away. They wouldn't do it. And then everybody was locked down for some number of months. And certainly in the older population, which had some reluctance to shop online, they lost a lot of that reluctance to shop online. They were less scared, basically. And so shortly after that, we started to see this change in the way customers behaved. And now, thankfully, and finally, we're relegating that freebie funnel configuration to the background. So we're just sending people right from our advertisement right to the sales page, and they're just buying right off the bat. So that's an enormously positive change, in my opinion. You don't end up with an email list full of, full of free seekers, and you have no idea who's a purchaser and who's not a purchaser, no idea who bought from you and who didn't. All that has sort of gone away. So one kind of really positive change and one not so positive change in terms of the cost. But that spinoff has driven like 6 months of effort, my part.
We're coming to a close here. I believe it. So that's interesting. One thing that becomes evident to me is that a person like I was when I joined AMMO might not be a target customer. And tell me I'm wrong. I would love for you to tell me I'm wrong because I want to say AMMO's for everybody. My inclination tells me that's not the case. I came on with one published book, a second one soon to be published, and a third one planned out and plotted. So I busted my ass to get those books ready to go. But essentially, I was selling a one book deal with the promise of two more soon. And I was able to do really well. I hung in there. I was profitable. I was not profitable. I was profitable. I was not profitable. Yeah. But I think when it was all said and done, you know, I think I lost maybe $400 over a period of 6 months. So it was a really good effort for somebody with a three book deal. And it was also, I was coming in at the tail end of when a freebie offer was still viable or kind of viable. Now I have five books that I can work with, and I still feel like I'm on the bottom end of where I can make AMMO work. Again, tell me I'm wrong, but that's kind of my sense, is that the program, because of the way that advertising is maturing, either we're looking for buyers who are willing to spend a little bit more per book, or you have to have a certain number of books ready to roll with.
Yeah, most buyers are fine with, you know, giving money for value. There's a certain cohort that, you know, they don't care what direct they read as long as it's free or cheap. I don't think that's the majority, certainly. But you bring up something very important, which is when does direct selling work for you versus when can you benefit from doing the market testing that precedes it? So one of the big changes that I also made was to address that issue, because one of the tragic things that happens is people will go off in a vacuum and they'll write five or six or seven books. And then they'll say, okay, I'm ready. I have all these books. Now let's go make a ton of money. Only to discover that readers are not interested in what they've written because they did all of this in kind of a vacuum. Or they were soliciting feedback, but it was kind of friends and family feedback or people that that you already knew. And those folks, they're not like, they're kinder to you. They're nicer. They're gentler with you than your market will be. And your market doesn't have any qualms raising the middle finger and telling you that I don't like your book whatsoever. I don't care to read them at all. So the most important thing you can do in any business is to produce a world-class product. In our business, you really can't, unless you're lucky, or unless you've been doing it for years and years with reader feedback, really hard to just sit down and do that. And if you've written fewer than a half dozen books or whatever, it's unlikely that you've gotten all that reader feedback. And so to mitigate that, to give people a chance, like a fighting chance of producing a really high quality product, I split the first portion of the AMMO program, which is aimed at direct sales. So authors selling directly to readers, collecting reader credit cards through your Shopify store, and the reader purchasing directly from you, and all of the money after credit card processing fees of, 3-5%, all of that shows up in your account. Before you have enough products to do that, you have to make these products. You have to write these books, and you have to write them well. And one of the things that we've noticed is that it's not just the ideas that matter, it's the particular words that you use to render those ideas. And it's not just the genre tropes that matter, it's the particular way that you realize those tropes and you bring them out to action. So what click testing does for you, which is our market testing process that also produces really high converting advertisements, and it's the beginning portion of the direct sales process, but it's also kind of the beginning portion of an author career from the standpoint that it allows you to battle test your ideas before you invest the months and thousands of dollars to turn it into a novel or a nonfiction title. So we split that off, and it's called click testing for authors. And there are two outcomes. There's one outcome with two benefits. The major outcome is you understand which 5% of your ideas really resonate best. And you learn a process where you can, over a couple of days, and spending $30 a day or so in ad budget just for a couple of days, you can test a dozen of your ideas and your audience will rank order them for you. Not, and I don't, when I say audience, I don't mean the people that you've already found. I mean complete and total strangers out there who are reading in your genre or who are interested in your nonfiction topic area. And they will rank order your ideas for you. And it's shocking how many times your darlings come back way down on the bottom of the list, right? Like it's a little bit disheartening because we really become attached to particular ideas and then we include other stuff in the test just to round out the, you know, the dozen or so variations that we're testing. And it's shocking how many times those ones we just tossed in there kind of willy-nilly, not expecting much, those come back to be the winners. And of course, when you're writing a book around these ideas, you would write a totally different book. You would go in a totally different direction. You know, if your audience could tell you, you know, these other 11 ideas, but we're really excited about this one. That's the book you would want to write, right? So that's the second part of it. And the first part of your question is, hey, do I have enough books to sell directly to my readers at a profit? Well, keep in mind that you need to make up $12 to $20 of advertising cost. And you want to do that inside your first month of that customer being with you, because your credit card company is going to expect to get payment for what you spent on your advertisements. So there is a number of books that, and it depends on the genre, but more is better, right? More high quality, professional grade, rivals traditionally published quality. That's the ticket. And, you know, depending on the genre, we see nonfiction authors in some cases doing really well with a couple, three books, you know, six figures a month kind of a thing.
Sure.
That's really rare for novelists, like really rare for novelists. And the novelists that we sort of use a six figure a month as the litmus test for what's the number of novels that we feel are viable in a particular genre. And if you're in the romance, world of things, typically 8 to 10 titles is your kind of your starting point. And for other genres, we typically see 5 to 7 in that ballpark is the number of, again, professional grade, high quality titles that will allow you to present enough buying opportunities to your customer inside of the first 30 days with you to make your advertising costs back. Mm.
So one thing I want to hit on before we move to the next piece of this puzzle, I have a very good friend who joined the program and was watching your early videos and got really, really angry that you would even suggest market testing books, because these books are art and we are out here to write a story that resonates with us. And if the world doesn't love it, then, you know, they should all just go to hell. Is kind of the idea. And I feel like there are a lot of authors out there who, in a sense, don't want to be pulled around by the nose. What I'm bringing this up for is because I don't actually hear you saying that. I hear you actually saying you have some ideas, test the ideas that you have to figure out where the sweet spot is. And the best analogy I can think of to fit here is that if you're in a relationship with somebody that you love and want to be married to or long-term living with and sharing a space, like, you don't just say, like, you know, if they don't like me exactly the way I am, then damn them. You know, you figure out, what are they like? What are they interested in? How can I present myself to be most attractive to that person? And you continue to do that throughout your life. If you want a happy relationship, if you want a happy readership, treat it like a relationship, I think. What are your thoughts there? Am I on the wrong track?
No, I think you're pretty close to target there. What I tell folks is, hey, they're all your ideas, right?
Yeah.
If you test 12 of them, you're thinking up all 12 of them. Now you may have a favorite, you know, and it's not actually not just the ideas, but also the specific words that you use. And certainly there are different variations that you can test for each idea. You know, it's not just all of the genre tropes. Everyone's very familiar with them. And, you know, to list them, it's not very interesting. But what's really interesting is the unique way that you bring those to life. What specific words do you use and what specific ideas do you pursue? So if anything, it helps you generate more ideas. And I'm a nerd and I geek out on this stuff. And I want to know what's the best way to produce the best ideas in any marketplace. Like, how do I improve? How do I make my stuff undeniable? And it's pretty clear from a number of different types of studies that the best way to produce amazing ideas is to produce a lot of them, produce a lot of your ideas. But we also find that up to 95% of the ideas that we think of just don't resonate. Or if they resonate, they just don't resonate well enough. So knowing that you only have a 1 in 20 chance that this idea, even if you love it, even if you think it's amazing, even if you think it's the most unique thing in the world, it may not be something that resonates. So you bring your magic with your 12 ideas or whatever, and then you go, hey, market, what do you think? Because I'm pretty excited about all of these ideas, some maybe more than others, but I can get behind all of them. And then your market will tell you, we really think we would buy more books if you wrote about this rather than the other thing. And and it's still you. It's still your magic. It's still yours is a book that nobody else would write because nobody else has your brain and your sensibility and your, you know, your approach to things and your outlook on things. But you do need that guidance because otherwise the same thing is that's a spark of brilliance in 5 out of 100 ideas is what makes the other 95 not so brilliant, at least according to your market. So it takes both of those things. You having the great idea that you're excited about and you stop everything and you write it down. Great. Include that in your testing. Just present it to your market in a particular way and they'll help you. They'll help select which of your genius ideas that you should go write and render in a book.
So a couple of things that have changed is that you've really focused, like we've just been talking about, on helping you to market test ideas so that the stuff that you then bring to the market is on pace with what they're already looking for. You notice that there has been a change in what it costs to acquire a customer. You've noticed that the customer is willing to pay more than maybe they used to be to a degree, like you said earlier, pay for quality. What would be another cascading item that has changed that you've noticed that you included in the most recent update?
We used to really focus exclusively on eBooks just because the logistics were significantly easier and the profit margins were often better. And at $5 in advertising costs per customer, that works pretty well. But what we've noticed is that many authors were not profitable until they also offered paperbacks. And 4 out of 5 purchases in the book world to this day are still paperbacks. There are many people who won't be caught dead with a reader. You know, they're just going to read on dead trees. So we one of the things that we've implemented for version 4 of the AMMO program is that we're starting off with eBooks and paperbacks available for purchase in your first offer package. We give it the silly name Doorbuster. Like, what's the good deal that people are excited about? And the other interesting thing about paperback purchasers is they're much less price sensitive than ebook customers are. So you can sell a $70 bundle to a brand new customer with paperbacks. And depending on your page count and the number of titles you're offering, that can immediately make your new customer profitable for you on their very first purchase. So that's another important change. And then the other thing that happens is that people invariably wind up on the wrong kind of sales page. You know, your paperback offer, you might have a little, you know, one or two fewer titles than you have in your ebook offer or your audiobook offer. And so the offer structure is likely different between ebooks and audiobooks. So we recommend and just have seen work much better that you have a dedicated sales page for your paperback and your ebook offers. So they're separate. But people invariably wind up in the wrong place. Like paperback fans invariably wind up on the ebook thing. It's just the second law of thermodynamics, right? Entropy, disorder increases. There's nothing you can do about it. But what we've done is we've made it very prominent. Hey, if you would prefer paperbacks and you're seeing only ebooks, click on this button and we'll show you our paperback deal. Or if you're on the paperback page and people want audiobooks and you have an audiobook offer that you can sell because you you know, you own your files and you're not locked into a crappy revenue share kind of agreement. You can offer an off-ramp to an audiobook page as well. So this giving customers a way to find their way to their preferred format and having a customized offer in each of the formats that resonates well with readers, but also provides you enough revenue so that you can keep the whole thing afloat and make a profit and, you know, maybe trade in the day job at some point. That's been important. So that's another key learning that we've really seen develop over the past year. Is that because of the people who read paperbacks, they don't think anything about spending $20 for a paperback, or hardcover people, you know, $25 or $30 for a hardcover. They'll pick it up in Costco and or wherever they shop. Same idea here. They know what they like and they know what it costs and they know that stuff is not free and they're adults about it. And so you can often get over that hump to profitability by offering that second format, certainly ebooks and paperbacks. And if you have audiobooks, I strongly recommend advertising those as well.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I would have to ask the expert because assuming makes me look stupid. If you are doing a funnel for paperbacks and a funnel for ebooks, is it possible to confuse Facebook, or is Facebook so savvy that it will serve to the right people? Like you said, the law of thermodynamics, Murphy's law, is going to mean that some people who are supposed to be ebook shoppers land in the wrong place. But does that mean that you are causing lag or drag with the Facebook algorithm?
Not really, because Facebook doesn't really have that level of granularity on exactly what people purchase from Amazon. Amazon doesn't share data, to my knowledge, with Facebook. There's no way that you can get...
Did I say Amazon?
I'm sorry?
If I said Amazon, I guess my question, and I just want to make sure so that maybe you're answering my question and not... anyways, I want to know if advertising paperbacks and ebooks both on Facebook at the same time. So if you have separate offers, then I assume you're running separate ads. Do those separate ads conflict? Do they cause any drag or lag? And sorry, my question was not clear.
Not usually. And the reason is that when you're constructing your audiences in the Meta Ads Manager, you might say, you know, I want to reach people who like psychological thrillers, but I only want to reach ebook people.
Perfect.
Well, Facebook has a guess who are ebook people. Maybe they're people who've liked Kindle, a Kindle page or something associated with Kindle, or, you know, they have some reason to believe that this person might like the e-reader itself or might like ebooks as opposed to paperbacks. But that's not hard data. That's an inference that is not always accurate. And judging by the thousands and thousands of customers who have come in via the ebook funnel and purchased paperbacks, I don't see operationally, like in practice, I don't see any conflict whatsoever between advertising to the same audience for ebooks and for paperbacks. And really, if the market is 80% paperback fans and 20% ebook fans, well, your odds are significantly higher on the paperback side anyway. And, you know, we're seeing that for a number of authors who are, their primary, obviously, if you're a children's author and you're selling illustrated children's books, those are almost always hardcovers and they're almost always physical copies. I don't know anybody whose kids read on a Kindle. I'm sure it's coming, but I don't think it's where we're at right now. So you wouldn't advertise and try to sell ebook children's books in that case. But if you write books for adults, nonfiction or fiction, if they're chapter books, they're not coffee table books or cookbooks or photography books or whatever, then you're advertising in both ebook and paperback format. And most customers are paperback customers. They just prefer paperbacks, you know, physical copies to them. But they're all mixed in together inside of the audiences inside of Meta. Meta, you can try to target them and pull them apart, but in practice, it doesn't really work, right?
Yeah. You said something else in passing, and I think we briefly touched on it the last time you were on the podcast. But I want to ask you again because you're relaunching Ammo. Is it really possible?
Update.
Yeah, right. Thank you. An update, but is it really possible See, you're more specific with your words, which is probably why you're so much more successful than me in general. I just throw words around willy-nilly.
With gray hair. I mean, you'd think I'd figure a couple things out by now. Give it a minute.
So my curiosity is it possible still as a novelist to make a living? Because I just finished recording a podcast episode with a friend I admire who's writing amazing books that are doing really well. And he says, you don't get in this to make a living. It's worse than a minimum wage job. Do you agree with that?
That is the story of entrepreneurship of any kind. Yep. The first years and how many years, that depends, but that is the story of every business I have ever started. That if you look at the hourly wages before you get your first sale, you know, to a real live customer, yeah, it's utterly depressing. And what you're getting at, I think, is the mindset, because every business looks good until you are in it. I've switched from perfectly viable businesses to a different perfectly viable business because I was just too immature to recognize, like, dude, this is how it works. You don't just show up. And it's not like in college where you can study hard and walk in and ace the exam. And, you know, you get the same amount of time everybody else in the class has to study. And all you have to do is just be better than them. That's not how business works of any kind. Business is, you got to knock the socks off of your customers. It's got to be really good because there are so many other options, no matter what business you're in. This one, it's got a nice big number, like 60 million books. And I think that's a conservative number. So what are you going to do to be better than 99.5% of the books in your genre? What are you going to do to raise awareness more than 99% of other authors are doing so that you can sell your books? Well, there's a few ways you can go about it, but none of them are easy. None of them are, they're either expensive in terms of the dollar amount or expensive in terms of the life energy that you pour into it for months and years on end. And that is the case of every entrepreneur I know. Certainly my business mentors ahead of me, nobody talks about, you know, gosh, I found the right opportunity and, you know, it's just been smooth sailing ever since. Yeah. It's just struggle in the early years. So he's absolutely right. It's worse than minimum wage, but it's not specific to being an author. It's specific to being a non-employee. It's specific to being an entrepreneur. And being an author is an entrepreneurial endeavor. Like, people don't realize, but James Patterson was a marketing executive first. And a lot of what he did and how he did it was completely informed by his understanding of how business works. And he's very much running a business and has for, you know, for decades. And, but that's not the romantic story that we typically hear. You know, we hear about Stephen King in the laundry room, right, banging out his next novel when he gets the phone call from his agent saying, oh, by the way, you've sold a gazillion copies this quarter, right? That's what we're sort of used to, but that's not the way it works really in real life. So expect struggle, expect to have to earn it. And you know, when it feels hard, what I've taken to telling myself, because it feels hard in my businesses, like once a week, like legitimately hard. I keep expecting it to stop feeling hard as I grow and make more money and earn more customers and get better at stuff. It's just hard in a different way. Yeah. But at the core of it, it requires you to just keep doing the work irrespective of your emotions at the moment. Mm. And if you just keep going, good things happen. Mm. But you do have to keep going. It doesn't matter what business you're in, and especially in this one. So
I'm gonna have to figure out how to do a mashup of that moment that you just spoke to and the moment that I had with the last guy in the podcast, because it's almost like there's a conversation that all three of us had that's very, very similar, which is, and a lady I spoke to earlier today too, is like, the idea is just don't quit. If you refuse to quit, eventually you will arrive. Now, I understand that there are economic constraints on what some people are able to do. And that has been my experience being part of Ammo, is that I'm probably one of the slowest learning people in the e-commerce world. I can't figure it out. Like, I've had a really hardship in getting there. And so eventually I had to make the choice to kind of step back on advertising dollars And that's illustrative, I think, of another thing, which is you said you walked away from viable business to another viable business. It's not as if skills aren't transferable. And I think that's another really important piece of this is you can't assume what one person is coming into AMMO already knowing, because they may be able to adapt their guitar playing skills to the piano a lot quicker than you can adapt gardening to playing the piano. In my case, I'm really good at in-person sales because I am deeply emotional. I am emotion first, logic last. And so when I go to an in-person book sale, people feel how much I love my own books, and they probably think the covers look a whole lot better than they actually do. It's like drunk goggles being around me. So
I would say that we are all emotional.
Yeah.
We just are. That's so the way the brain is wired, that emotional area, it touches every other area. And the kinds of thoughts you can think in any moment are subject to the kinds of emotions that you are experiencing. Those parts of the brain are talking to each other.
Yeah.
And so when you're tired, when you're beat down, when you've made the mistake of reading a bad review, like one of those really nasty personal ones, you know, where you're like, oh my gosh, maybe I can get my day job back. Right.
Yeah.
There is like that moment happens to everybody. And we get better and worse at, I mean, we can get better or worse at how we handle it, which I think brings up the observation that I've had for a while now, which is that entrepreneurship, and again, being an author is being an entrepreneur, it is the single most effective catalyst for personal growth and maturity that I've ever experienced. And I've done cool things. You know, I went to a service academy. I flew F-16s for a lot of years. I've made money in other markets. I've done cool things in the aerospace industry, but not as an entrepreneur until I, you know, started cutting my entrepreneurial teeth. It's different. It is just different. And the main difference is that there's no pipeline through which you matriculate, at least not one that's evident. You're kind of inventing it as you go. And you can look at other entrepreneurs and talk to them, even in your space, and you can look at what they've done and you're like, oh, well, that's just this connected to that, connected to this. I'll just do that thing and it'll work. But it won't, because, I mean, unless you're super lucky, like lottery winner lucky. What is hidden from the outside is the discovery, which is a process, of what your readers really resonate with, or what your customers in any business really resonate with. And so the only way to gain that specific knowledge about your voice, your audience, your genre, its tropes, and the specific way that you create your world-class book. And I mean, you have to create it with the idea in mind that you're going to do what it takes to be world-class at it, because that's really your only fighting chance. You know, you can, all the clever marketing in the world will sell a few copies, but as soon as negative word of mouth starts to kick in, you're toast, it's over. Unless your readers are passing your book to each other and saying, you've got to read this, or, you know, go check this out, you've got to do it. It's going to be an uphill battle. You're going to be sailing into the wind. When you produce an amazing product and you have done all the learning and the testing and the hard editorial work, when you get those drafts back from your editor and you're like, oh, I thought I was much closer than this, right? That is the process by which you succeed in this industry. It's 1,000 tiny failures and 1,000 disappointments, and you find someplace the courage and the perseverance just to keep going. And that's the thing, for real. And one of the keep going things is, it's on my top of mind because I just experienced it today. We just got back from a trip. My daughter won an art contest. Her artwork is displayed in the White House. So we're like, oh, this is a big moment. We flew out there and it was so cool.
That's amazing.
But it's a big, you know, lots of logistics, and I'm just getting settled back in, and I sit down in the chair. I'm like, oh, I do not want to answer these customer emails. And I also don't want to go film this other lesson. But by now I know that I don't get to indulge that I don't want. I just get into the work. Like I just make the choice to open the email thing and write back to the customers, right? Or review the script one more time for the lesson and then go film it. And then once you get into the work, if you can quietly, you know, the other voices in your head will get quieter. And then pretty soon there's just the work and you're sort of in your flow state. And that's a really neat trick to learn. Just sit down and start. And then the rest, you know, good things tend to happen. But yeah, it's hard. It's legitimately difficult. And one of the things you can say when you're feeling that in the moment is go, good. I'm glad it's hard, because if it were easy, like uploading any file to Kindle Unlimited or KDP, that's easy. Well, there's not much opportunity there. Okay, that was 2011, right? That opportunity was over 13 years ago. Now it's just down to work. So I'm glad it's hard, because think of how many people are not willing to do this work that we're willing to do. And that's the kind of approach I try to have to it, because I think that's what it takes. There's nothing that's ever really come easy.
Yeah. What I love so much about what you're saying, it was a question that I kind of leaning into, is I've been thinking for a while during this conversation about Hugh Howey. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He, to me, is that guy who had the perfect mentality of work hard, and he was at the right moment at the right time. Like Kindle's just becoming a thing when wool is getting out to the world. Yeah. And the next thing you know, like, he spends a decade waiting for his show to become, or for, see, I think of it that way now, his books to become a show, like become something on film. He was just assumed, and his success. And he goes with a major publisher. The other day I was listening to a podcast with him, and he said, you know, I can make so much more money self-publishing, but I have more money than I know what to do with. So I'm just looking for convenience these days. There's a guy who worked really, really hard and took advantage of opportunities. I also have interviewed people on this podcast who experienced what it was like to sell a book on Kindle in 2012. And then when it became more difficult, they figured that the world was out to just screw them. And, you know, they're angry. They're angry that Book Sirens doesn't work as well, or whatever other giveaway thing. So if I had to choose, and I think you're saying the same thing, I would choose to be hard at first to make sure I know what it feels like to really suck and to be obscure and then succeed because I didn't quit, than to hit the lightning bolt and never succeed to the level that I know I'm capable.
Well, it's the thing about Hugh Howey, and think of like Joe Conrath, J.A. Conrath.
Yes.
Folks in that era, they were putting in their time. Yep. Hugh Howey worked in a bookstore, loved books, read books, wrote. And that's the main thing I would say. I mean, be an author because you can't not write. Don't be an author because you want to be rich or you want to be famous. Like, it's too hard. It takes too long. You have to have the love, I think. And Hugh Howey had the love. That's what he loved doing. And he did it when there was no money in it. And he tried the new thing when it showed up. And the love and the quality that he put into his work, it's evident. Read a Hugh Howey book. It's great. I don't care which one it is. It's great, right? And Conrath had the same thing. He was, you know, mid-list author. I think he had some publishing deals that, you know, weren't terrific, and he had a bunch of books that he just wrote because he was a writer, right? He wasn't like, I'm going to take over the world by writing this next book. He was like, I just have this idea for a story, and it's what I love to do, so I'm doing that. And then his moment came, and when that moment came, he had that backlist that propelled him to, you know, seven figures a year. Well, that wasn't a thing that people knew about, you know, early in those early days. So, and then the to your point about, well, what happened between 2012 and call it 2016, when the world was like, wow, here's opportunity. It did get hard for those people for whom it was at first easy. And this is the thing, because the market is always changing. It's just like at the beginning of this, you're like, hey, what's changed? I'm like, well, it's harder. It's more expensive, right? Ads are more expensive because they're more effective, because Meta has dialed it in, but we have to respond. Also, inflation has happened. But eBooks are still capped at $9.99 for the 70% royalty split on Amazon. So ad costs have gone up, but book prices have stayed, eBook prices at least, by the dominant force in the entire market have been capped effectively so that they're not subject to inflation. Well, how do you deal with that mismatch? We adapt. We do homework. Like, I've been 7 days a week, heads down for since early November, right? So there's just no easy button ever. We always feel like, oh, I'm going to get this done, and the doors will open and the clouds will part and the angel choirs will sing and the rays of sun will beam down and it will be rainbows and unicorns forever. No, it's going to be rainbows and unicorns for a week if you're lucky. And then you're going to get that customer email, or you're going to get the edits back from the editor, or there will be a policy change or something. There's always something. Like, it's always changing. There is no static. There is no, you know, like, there's no straight and level. There's no cruise. You're either climbing or descending. Like, you're either growing or dying, but you're never steady state. And it takes constant effort. And that's hard. So I think it's as much as anything, it is a mindset to get into that. Hey, if this were easy, it would be a day job, right? Somebody would hand you a check. Like, every job that we've ever held, any of us, has been made dumb enough to be delegated to anybody off the street, just about, right? They've taken all the hardness out of most of the jobs that we have. And I held a job for many, many years. Like, I'm not calling anybody out. I'm observing that, oh, this doesn't require like Albert Einstein or Jeff Bezos to do this job. It's been made simple enough that we can execute it. Some are more complicated than others, of course, but entrepreneurship is not that. You're making the job up as you go. More than that, you're actually discovering what the job needs to be right now as you go, which is often different than what you thought the job was going to be when you woke up this morning, right? So, but that's a hard thing for us to get our minds around. It's a hard adjustment to, like I say, it's prompted the most growth for me personally, you know, aside from like relationship stuff that, you know, in your intimate relationships, that's a source for a great deal of personal growth. Entrepreneurship has rivaled that as well for me, just because it is so dependent on how you show up minute by minute, yeah, day by day.
Yeah. I told my then fiance that we wouldn't get married unless she was okay with writing being the thing that was non-negotiable. So you're marrying a writer, and that's always going to be the case. So I'm going to do what I need to do. Everything else is negotiable, but this is non-negotiable. And that was how I felt about it then. It's how I feel about it now. And we've never had a argument about it. I mean, in fact, I think there's been times where I felt a little guilty at how much time I'm spending with it. And I'll tell her that I'm planning on spending some more time with her. And she's like, don't you have things you need to be doing? Mm-hmm. And that's a nice feeling. It's really good. I wish that for anyone who's in this. I am curious, though. We've talked so much. We've done such a good job in this episode of highlighting the challenges. I would love to end on why AMMO is the perfect thing to, if there's such a thing as a shortcut. I can say this both from experience and from the stories I've heard from friends I've built in the AMMO program. If there's such a thing as a shortcut, AMMO is the closest thing to it I've ever found, which is, if you really have great books and you just aren't selling online, AMMO will show you how to do that in relatively short order. So talk to me about AMMO as a shortcut, because it is ultimately that as well.
Well, I've been disabused of the notion of a shortcut. I've just discovered that hard work is the shortcut. And there's no doubt about it. AMMO is full of hard work. Like, it is, yes, not, you're going to be fussing with web tools and doing a bunch of crap that is not writing. And you will need to continue to adjust and update your assets that you're putting in front of customers so that they can continue to make money for you or make more money for you. But I think the thing that has separated AMMO is that from the beginning, it's the name of it is Author Marketing Mastery Through Optimization. And we certainly nerd out on stuff that helps people sell more books, but it's really, from the get-go, it's been an MBA in disguise. That's what I was hoping to create. And we leaned into that a lot in version 4, and which is the version I'm finishing up right now, just the latest update. And if you're in the program, this shows up free. It's part of the deal that you you know, that you signed up for when you joined the program, that all updates in the future are free. But one of the things that I'm bringing back from an earlier iteration, an earlier version of the program, is the Ledger of Legends. And it's the thing that helps you track how you're doing financially on any given day and every day. But what I've added this time around is that the ledger will suggest to you, hey, it's time to iterate your paperback sales page. It's time to make an adjustment and update it. So it does that based on the numbers. What I wanted was a speed and simplicity for people, because the question that we answer a lot is, hey, what should I do now? And so my question is always, well, let's look at the numbers. What are the numbers telling us? So after hearing and answering that question a few hundred times, it sunk in that, hey, there's a way that we can do this automatically so that you're both really on top of your numbers. And this is a big deal because we've had folks sell a lot of books, like a lot of books. And I go, hey, how's everything profitability-wise? You're selling a lot of paperbacks. You're scaling your ads aggressively. It's like, oh, great, great. Everything's great. The credit card bill comes due. And what they figure out is, oh, no, I thought my gross revenue was my net revenue. So I hadn't been accounting for printing and shipping costs all this time. And now I'm in debt. So I wanted to take that away and have that just be drop dead simple. You just plug your numbers in from the prior day, from your sales pages and your stores like Shopify and Amazon. And then at the end of that, it'll tell you, here's how you're doing today. And it's how you're doing over the last 7 days and 30 days. By the way, you should iterate the champion variant of your sales page. You should definitely iterate the order bump page for your paperbacks, right? Or it's time now to update your post-purchase upsell. So it just tells you, hey, go do this. And that takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. So that frees up that mental bandwidth of like, what do I need to do now? Instead of what do I need to do now? What do I need to work on? It's more along the lines of, okay, I can tell that this part of the sales page is not working. What are some ideas that I have that I can substitute for this element that seems to be like scaring people away? So once you go through the work of setting everything up and wiring everything together, and it's work, like make no doubt about it. This is not like watch some videos and feel smart and feel like you've done things. You have to get your hands dirty in this. And it is work, full stop. And it was work forever running a business, literally forever. There's no easy button ever. But you are armed with the tools that have sold a ton of books for a lot of folks. And you know, we've got now 15 million dollar a year earners in the program. And that's a big deal. It's like 0.0006% of authors ever sell $1 million worth of their books in their lifetime, much less every year.
It's amazing.
And some amazing, amazing success stories. And these are happening right alongside people who are also struggling, right? So it's both things happening at once. And that's, I think, what I want to impress upon people. If you want to do this for real at a professional level, it's going to be hard. It will be work. It will hurt a little bit. It will be really uncomfortable. You'll feel really discouraged a lot of the time. And you'll also have these amazing moments where you're like, I can see the path now. I'm on. I can see it. It's happening. Yeah. Not like the movies where it's a 20-second music montage, but it's happening, right? So what I think is at the heart of that, why have our authors done as well as they've done? And let's face it, not everybody makes money selling books. It's a hard business. But the reason that we've been able to beat the market, if you will, is because at the very core, I've really tried to keep the fundamentals at the forefront. You're serving a customer who has preferences. Wouldn't it be great to know what those preferences were before you tried to serve them, right? And then you can align your entire business around what your customers demonstrate they value. And that, sure, you have to separate yourself a bit from the romantic notion of a tweed jacket with elbow patches and a tobacco pipe and in your writing in your castle, in your drawing room, whatever. That's not a thing, really. It's just getting your ideas out there, getting them tested, making them into professional grade books, and then being a professional about how you run your business as well. And if you can do those things, if you can wrap your mind around that, and if you agree with it, then you can be a professional as an author. If you're just writing because you love writing and that is all you want to do, hallelujah, do that. Absolutely do that. Do it to your heart's content. Write the things, whatever comes to you, whatever feels good in the moment, go for it. If you want to make a business out of your writing, you do have to treat it like a business. Yeah. Because you're subject to all the realities that every business is subject to. So I think that's the main difference. We're not like, here's one weird trick to, you know, to increase your sales. This is like soup to nuts, A to Z, fairly comprehensive approach at applying two very basic fundamentals. Discover with precision and accuracy what your customers want and then give it to them. That's the recipe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very simple, but it has a lot of important implications that we spend a lot of time fleshing out.
So this is one of the things that I can only assume because I have not arrived at this moment in my life, but everything that you're saying is seasoned by time. As you continue to work hard, the hard stays hard, but the baseline continues to rise. Perhaps your cost of living does as well as you enjoy, you know, more luxury and everything. But I'm thinking specifically in this moment about like things like an email list. Every customer that you get when you sell direct, you now have their email address. You now have a way to communicate with them. And each new book that you release, you can do a blast and let them know. And you're going to see a certain number of sales from people who really loved what they read and were waiting for the next one. Would you agree with me that if you hang in long enough, that threshold does rise and that you do experience more successes, or do you always have that sense of like it could all come crashing down?
If you keep doing the work day in and day out consistently, it's really unlikely that you won't start to see success. Realize that what exponential growth looks like in the early years is no growth at all, right? It looks like not much is happening. It's pretty flat, that earning curve over time. And you think this is never going to happen. But what you don't realize is that it is happening. The things that are happening is that you are rearranging your brain so that your brain now knows what it needs to do and how it needs to do it. And when you've done enough of it, that you have enough high quality artifacts out there, whether you're building a brand as an author, whether you're writing high quality emails to your list, telling them stories, entertaining them, helping them, enlightening them, changing their lives, making their lives better, sales follow. Sales follow. And people think, you know, there's one big idea. Apple, that's one big idea, right? No, Apple is not one big idea. Apple is 10,000 details done professionally for years on end. Same with Amazon. Oh, right place, right time, big idea. No, those people, they were in the weeds, in the details, day in and day out, and they were bringing excellence and integrity to that process. And if you can bring excellence and integrity to the day in and day out of your writing career and your book selling career over time, that almost always manifests. If you're in a hurry, like, I need to make rent this month, I better sell a million copies of my book, I never see that happen. I'm sure it does happen. I don't know anybody for whom that's happened. It's, you just don't know what you don't know when you start out, you know? So, and that's why I say, if you love it, all of this is, it's just enjoyable. If you love the process of writing a great book, if you love writing beautiful stories full of beautiful sentences, that's the core of it. And you can bring that same aesthetic, that same value, that same character to the business aspect of it as well.
Absolutely. We are at the hour, and I want to get you back to working on version 4. So let's wrap it up here. Everybody knows where to find you because Wednesday is the AMMO edition of TRBM. But if there's anything that you're working on that you'd like people to know about outside of this conversation, please share it here.
This is it. This is 7 days a week for Eons. I'm really excited to get this out the door. I'm eager to get it out the door. I'm not in a hurry to get it out, but I'm eager. I want it to be I want it to be amazing. So I'm putting in the effort to get as close to amazing as I can. But emmoauthor.com, that's our kind of our front door. And if you're interested in anything that you've heard here, that's a great starting place to learn more.
Perfect. Link, as always, in the show notes. Steve, from the bottom of my heart, I am personally grateful for you. You might not like the word shortcut, but you certainly shortcutted my path to success. And yes, it's still been incredibly hard work. And I don't even like it every day. I'm in that space in my life right now where it's just so hard. It feels like I'm in the boxing match and I'm getting punched right now. And yet still here I am. And that has a lot to do with you. You gave me a lot of hope. I had that moment where I saw. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening?